Welcome to the world today. My name is Frank Weltner. I am the librarian for JewWatch, the largest compendium of information about Jewish organizations and news on the internet today. In addition, I am the librarian and archivist for a new website, www.americanussr.com, which is already the largest compendium of history concerning the negative aspects of the United States of America, which the CIA, FBI, the presidency, the Congress, and all other agencies of the United States want you to know nothing about. Welcome to the world today. This is January the 5th, 2011, and my name is Frank Weltner. There's a lot of news today that we could discuss, but I think we'll start off, number one, with an article that I plucked from Infowars.com, where Kurt Nimmo, a reporter, has confirmed that Jesse Ventura's conspiracy theory episodes are disappearing from DVRs at a rapid pace. It seems that TiVo and other manufacturers have built machines which, for some reason, are beginning to erase episodes of Mr. Ventura's conspiracy theory, especially those that the government doesn't like. For instance, the heavily censored police state episode and shows on the JFK assassination and the worldwide water conspiracy are disappearing more rapidly than the others. People have written to Infowars.com to reveal that, to their chagrin, many of these shows have disappeared rapidly, and they had nothing to do with it, but the machines seem to be erasing them and sending them off into the black hole of TiVoship. They're just not there anymore. They just simply have disappeared so that these folks can't look at them again, they can't show them to their friends, they can't copy them. They're just gone. It looks like Big Brother might have something to do with it, according to the article. And I'm not sure if it's correct or not, but the article seems to have its witnesses all in line, one after the other, saying that that these things have disappeared. One of them said, I had AT&T U-verse, and the FEMA camp episode has been erased. Well, that's just one of many that are quoted here. Another one says, I had 7 episodes of Ventura on my DirecTV DVR, all of them marked as keep, so they shouldn't have been erased. But the police state episode is gone, and I think when they do code updates, that's when they erased. It's absolutely nuts. Well, here you have these people paying for the rental of these devices, hoping that they'll be able to use them as they wish, and now other people, censors, seem to be playing with them and erasing things which are deemed at this point politically incorrect. Is it true? I don't know if it's true or not, but obviously these people have noticed that this has happened to them. And it seems also that Time Warner pulled one of the shows, and True TV, which is owned by Turner Broadcasting, a subsidiary of Time Warner, went along with it. And then Tennessee Representative Steve Cohen also turned up the heat on True TV, which is showing these episodes. Whatever the full cause of the behind-the-scenes pressure, it's clear that the government does not want audiences discussing FEMA camps and fusion centers, or looking up H.R. 645. The bill named and read in the episode that authorizes FEMA emergency centers, which were reported on December the 3rd. Alex has done all he can to make sure the True TV series is packed with hard-hitting facts and full of real, substantial issues, though the show employs the dramatic techniques used throughout TV land. This is not the typical fluff. People had better understand that these are truly groundbreaking shows that are discussing damning evidence that the establishment doesn't want sinking into the minds of a mainstream audience. Who knows if tonight's water episode, investigating lithium, uranium, and fluoride being added to drinking water as a means of population control, will itself even air or be replayed after the fact. Well, isn't that something? To think that the government has so many friends at TiVo and at UVerse and elsewhere that these shows, which are controversial and the government doesn't want aired, in fact, they've even gotten them to not air one or two of them, are then also erased from the TiVos and UVerse DVRs of the people who have rented them and owned them. So that against their wishes, that which they wish to have saved forever and to keep are gone forever. Well, that's America. What can you do? What can you do? The government came after me because of my Jew Watch News site. They decided to hassle me, and they investigated me for fraud, which they claimed that I had done, and they found out I hadn't done any. But that didn't stop them. They still wanted it off the air. Fortunately, I sold the site to a friend of mine for several years while they were messing with me, so that when they ordered me to get rid of it, I said, well, I don't even own it, so you can't do anything about it. And so they were out to lunch on it then, at that point. There was nothing they could do because I didn't own it, so they couldn't come to me and terrorize me anymore. Now, you talk about Islamic fascists. These Islamic fascists, as the Jews call these religious people who worship Islam, are nothing like the Judeo-fascists of the federal government, like Michael Chertoff and like Mr. Mukasey of the Department of Justice. I mean, these goons came right after me. They sent me a letter with their name at the very top of the page, saying I would either come in and talk with some of their fascist representatives, or they would put me in jail. It was simply a black flag op, is what it was. They were misusing their power to do exactly the opposite of what they're required to do in the American federal government, which is to protect everyone's civil rights. Instead, they used the color of law as goons, as Nazis, as Judeo-Bolsheviks to try to silence my voice. Silence my freedom, deny me the rights of the First Amendment to the right to publish and the right to speak. Proving that the United States has moved down the Judeo-Bolshevik path toward the USSR that it's already rapidly becoming. That the passage of the Patriot Act was just a precursor to a complete shutdown of civil rights for every American in this country. The same way the Jews, when they ran the Soviet Union, and if you don't know it by now, let me repeat that to you. The Jews from New York ran the Soviet Union, and it went over there on ships from New York to Petrograd with $20 million in their pocket. $20 million came from their relative, Jacob Schiff, the president of the National Guarantee Bank. And that $20 million was used by Trotsky, who was also Jewish, to start the Red Army, to pay people to storm up the parliamentary building and take the government from the democracy to the communism that it became, and then to flush one Christian after the other into the mud with shovels and with gun bullets until 65 million Christians had been slaughtered by the Jews of the Soviet Union. And those that weren't slaughtered, many of them were in the gulags for the whole rest of their lives, working as slaves on slave wages, which were basically no wages at all, and eating food that wasn't even fit for a dog. I mean, it looked like a Missouri puppy mill. And that went on for over 50 years. And in fact, the last ones were still going after 70 years, and some of the people were left in there because they'd been there so long they were afraid, since all their relatives were dead or had disavowed them out of fear, that they would starve to death if they were released. All done by your friendly Jews of America. and 350 of them from New York ran the Soviet Union from the top down as a killing field, as a killing field. And now they're looking at everything that happens in America. They have their operatives that work very closely with the FBI and with the CIA, and there are many Jews who have penetrated the FBI and the CIA. Many of them work for the Mossad. Some of them work for both. They get money through the back door from each of them into their wallet. And those two organizations have become almost shadows of each other. What one knows, the other knows, and they share their information commonly with each other. As a matter of fact, Israel has taken upon it the FBI role of trying to keep tracks on every phone call made in the world. Now, you know, the FBI can't do that because of laws. They're not supposed to spy on Americans. So they've used Israel and several companies in Israel to keep the information on all the phone calls so that whenever they need it and they can get a court order to get it, Israel will sell it to them. That's how these Jews are being used to destroy your freedoms. They're being used to undercut the laws requiring the CIA and the FBI not to spy on you. And so they let the Jews do it. They let the ADL do it. They let the Southern Poverty Law Center do it, all of which are Jewish thug institutions. And the Southern Poverty Law Institute had penetrated Christian identity so much down at Elohim City that they were implicated in the newspapers with the Tim McVeigh bombing of the Murrah building. And there were various Jewish and Nazi-like characters that were working together on that little FBI, CIA, Judeo-Bolshevik scheme. And the clear import of it was to try to make it look as though right-wing Christian militias were vicious, dangerous people, when in fact they weren't. We haven't had any trouble with right-wing Christian militias in this country. It's all been a bunch of balderdash from a bunch of big-mouthed Judeo-Bolsheviks working for the FBI and probably being paid by them, although I'm sure they would do it for free. I'm sure they would, and they have such a huge budget because the bankers pay them anyway. You know, the banks make trillions of dollars, so surely a few million here and a few million there. Abe Foxman makes around $800,000 a year. He may even make over $1 million by now, but last I heard, he was making about $800,000 a year. I'm sure he works less than I do. And I don't get anything near that because I don't get any bankers paying me because I blow the whistle on these bankers, on these anti-American communist Bolshevik scumbags in New York. And you know, if you want to see who these people really are, just go on up to Brighton Beach along the ocean in New York and look at all the Jewish communists up there speaking Russian in the restaurants. And restaurants that serve all sorts of Russian food, like borscht. In fact, they call it the Borscht Belt. Why is it the Borscht Belt? Because they're a bunch of Russian communists, that's why. They're all borscht people. But you're not supposed to know that. You're not supposed to know that your country, one of the reasons it's in such trouble, is that the Borscht Belt has been controlling it for decades. For decades. And after communism was overthrown, these Jews scurried like rats back to New York where they came from. And that way they didn't have to suffer in Russia. And then the United States, on top of it, pays some of them their Social Security that they would have gotten if they were in Russia. But Russia doesn't pay that anymore because Russia went broke. But America will pay it for a Jew. Anything for a Judeo-Bolshevik who ran Russia and killed Christians. I guess that's what America's all about, is stifling Christians, pointing out that the Christian white right-wing militia are dangerous people, but the Jews are wonderful. The very Jews that started the Soviet Union or ran it. It's disgusting to see how far America's gone down the primrose path of total destruction, which is why I started the website AmericanUSSR.com, where you can hear this radio show and where you can see all of the dastardly things that the dirty, filthy country of America has done, not only around the world, but to its own citizens. And I keep bringing this up because I think it's one of the most dastardly things, is the idea of injecting plutonium into 14-year-old girls. Not that it's just so bad to do that anyway, but they didn't even tell anybody they were doing it. They just did it. And I keep telling you that, you know, when I was a kid in junior high or high school, I remember seeing the Army bring a bunch of soldiers to within 1 mile of the tower out in Nevada when they blew off an atomic bomb 1 mile from these kids. They were Army kids. They weren't kids. They were, you know, like in their early 20s, late teens. They got them into this foxhole 1 mile from the bomb, had them bent down on their knees and cover their eyes. They blew the bomb off. And there was so much radiation that through their hands, which were over their eyes, with their eyelids closed, they could see their bones in their eyes from the blast. The blast irradiated their bones to where they could see them in the radiation that was flying through them. And they took those kids and they put them up on top of the land and they walked them right across Ground Zero and said, "Look, we have proven that even when there's a nuclear bomb, we can walk right across the center area of the bomb and it doesn't bother anybody." Well, as it turned out, it did bother anybody. Every one of those kids died of leukemia within 20 years. 20 years. Did the government apologize? No. And the government's been shooting off those bombs, and there's a town close by called St. George. St. George has been studied by federal authorities and by doctors. People that live there have been classified and reported on for 50 years now. Actually, more than that, about 70 or 80 years, I guess it's been. And they knew that these people were getting a tremendous amount of radiation in their lungs, in their food, in their water, in the air, everywhere around them, radiation, because they were just a few miles from Ground Zero of the testing centers, and they were testing hundreds of bombs over the years there. So these people took the brunt of it. And, of course, the federal government wanted to know what would happen to people who had long-term radiation, and at St. George's, these people were sacrificed so that the goons in Washington, up there in the federal freak show, could study what might happen to soft, furry little human beings when a goon country like America shot off atomic bombs in the air, kicking up the dust and blowing it toward St. George's, a little innocent town where many, many people have died of leukemia and lung cancer and all sorts of other cancers and tumors. Because basically the United States is a heartless, inhumane nation that doesn't believe in civil rights, although it says that it does. In fact, when they were coming after me, trying to get Jew Watch off of the internet, in contravention of the civil rights laws of the United States and the Bill of Rights, Amendment 1, the president was standing up and saying, "We believe in dissident journalists. We protect them. We don't do what China does or what Russia does. We allow these people to operate and we protect them." Meanwhile, they were going after me for just doing that. What a bunch of liars. What a thieving, lying, scumbag country the United States actually is. And meanwhile, protecting the Judeo-Bolsheviks up in Brighton Beach, drinking their beet soup, their borscht, and eating their their Russian cheeses and so forth, and laughing about how they screwed over the Soviet Union and how they're doing it again to the United States right now. I tell you what, it just takes your breath away. It absolutely takes your breath away to see what's going on in this messed up country of ours. Yeah, I find it just almost unbelievable to even realize that I live here. I would do anything to move out of here and go to another country where I don't have to worry about these goons. But the reach of America goes so far, it's almost like the British Navy back at the time of Pitcairn Island, when one ship was taken over from a captain who was totally crazy. And the men retired on Pitcairn Island, where no one knew where they were at because they sank the ship. There was no evidence of them. And so that mutiny, the Kane Mutiny, went unpunished. But the United States, which has put nuclear bombs on two cities in Japan when the war was really basically over, but they just wanted to know what would happen if you subjected live little Japanese people to a burning atomic bomb at Town Central. And so, a few hundred feet in the air, they ignited this atomic bomb in Hiroshima. And, of course, all of the buildings began to burn. People out in the street, the bombs hit them, and their skin became huge boils, festering with radiation in them. And many of them died of painful deaths over the next year or two. Many of them were blinded, never saw again. Many of them had their hands burned away. They were facially scarred. Their lives were ruined. Hundreds of thousands of them, because of the monster known as the United States of America. And the sadistic geniuses that ran the science apparatus with a kind of Nazi-like efficiency. And then went to Time Magazine and said, oh, we're an innocent country. We just did this because we wanted to end the war, and we didn't want to have our GIs go into Japan. Whereas the real truth was that Japan had already said, we're ready to surrender. Where do we sign? Oh, it wasn't quite that easy. They wanted to see what would happen to these little Japanese people in two cities, not just one, but two, where they set off a bomb right a few hundred feet overhead, atomic bomb, destroying their lives, destroying their city. And they found out what happened. Most of them died miserably. And the American scientists were gleefully reported on this and took down the statistics. And now America knows exactly what will happen if they bomb Moscow or if they bomb Tehran or if they bomb Cairo or if they bomb London. They know. They know what will happen. They know exactly what percentage is going to be burned, how many are going to die immediately, the radius in which the death is immediate, and the radius in which it might take 5 years for the people to die from their injuries, and on and on and on. These quisling scientists, these Nazi-like scientists of the federal freak show at the Pentagon, have learned all of these things now through their treachery against humanity in the Orient, in Germany, etc. One of the worst things that the Americans did, along with the British, was to bomb 24 hours a day in Germany during World War II. In fact, my German teacher in Kaiserslautern, not Kaiserslautern, but Kokel am See, told me then in my class that when she was a little girl, her mom went to get some eggs. And on the way back with a basket full of eggs, an Allied plane began shooting machine gun bullets at her and her two little children. And they had to run and hide in a ditch. And when it was over with, they fortunately didn't get hit with the bullets, but the bullets were landing within inches of them. And the plane made several advances toward them, but couldn't reach them once they got to this ditch. And the mother, she said, my mom got up and she noticed all the eggs were broken, and she started screaming and crying that the eggs were broken. And she says, I and my sister, we were just happy we were alive. We were wondering, why was she crying over the eggs? It didn't make any sense because, my sister and I were worth more than those eggs. So there you had it, the GIs in the air over Germany were killing innocent people as a part of a war policy. These were not collateral damage. They actually sought them out. Anybody that was on the ground was fair play to these goons. These goons who were playing war games with humanity. People unarmed, women and children. And then they would come in and carpet bomb a small town at night, knowing full well that almost every building would collapse, killing all of the inhabitants, and none of them were soldiers. They were just little farmers and peasants who eked out a living in what was kind of a frozen tundra in the winter in a kind of semi-fertile farmland or forest during the summer. But they just loved to kill them. America and England just loved to kill the Germans. They liked that. They got a certain joy about making these people suffer. They loved it. They loved it because at the top echelons of America, the government was as sick as it could be, just as it is today. And that's why today, just as in the 1940s, we've been at war every single minute, ever since World War II was over. We found one place after another to float bombs out over the homes of innocent people, killing women and children, over and over and over again, country by country, war by war. Doesn't matter if it's Vietnam, or if it's Korea, or if it's Iraq. We have also overturned democracies and put in emperors and shahs in the place of democratically elected people. And there's the freak show of Saudi Arabia, where you have these corrupt sheiks running the place. The United States just loves that. They love it because the Saudi sheiks will do whatever America wants. Whatever the sadistic giant in Washington, D.C. does, the sheiks in Saudi Arabia will kiss up to them and give them oil and allow them to continue with these adventures. And it's just amazing. It's just amazing the depths to which the American government will go to mess with people, to do evil things where everybody in the world can see it. Now, we used to watch Russia do things and Cuba do things over in Africa and in Eastern Europe with Russia, and we would report on that and talk about what an awful, evil place Russia was, and novelists wrote novels about the Russians bombing the United States with nuclear weapons, and all the people in America suffering and being burned by these weapons, as though we were a bunch of Oriental people in the Hiroshima and Nagasaki being bombed by Americans. But they didn't quite put it that way. They said that the Russians would do that. America wouldn't do anything like that. We were self-blinded as to what we did to the Japanese with those bombs that we set off there. That's what we always do. We allow ourselves to be self-blinded. And Judeo-Bolsheviks that ran the Soviet Union are related to the people that own and run the newspapers and the TV stations and radio stations here in America. And as a result of that relationship, what they did in Russia is kept from us. We don't know that the Jews murdered 65 million Christians in Russia. Now, we're told that 6 million Jews died in Germany in the Holocaust, but we're not allowed to go to Auschwitz and to test the stones of the walls of the so-called gas chambers. And those that have found that there was barely a trace of any poisonous gas in those walls. Certainly not enough to account for anybody really being killed in there. And that's according to the curator of the museum, Dr. Piper, who runs the Auschwitz Museum. But we're, you know, if you doubt the Holocaust, then you can go to jail if you're sent to Germany by Interpol. And we've had several people from America sent there. Most of them are, people that were originally from Germany, like Ernst Zundel. But David Irving was arrested in in Austria for saying that he didn't believe that the Holocaust happened. And it was like the Middle Ages. It was like Galileo going to the Pope, being arrested and taken in shackles to see the Pope because he had seen moons circling Jupiter and going around Jupiter and saying that, well, the Earth goes around the Sun the same way and the Moon goes around the Earth the same way, and that this is what happens on other planets, and that there might even be life on any, some of these moons and these other planets. And he had to recount that. He had to recant it to the Pope, or be slaughtered, to be hanged, or to be burned at the stake. Galileo, very, very famous story. The same thing happened to David Irving. He had to recant what he said about not being able to find any evidence of the Holocaust when he did his research for his books on Hitler and on Stalin and on World War II. And he said, I always want to have primal evidence, and I couldn't find any. There was no evidence in the memos of meetings in the higher German command. There was no evidence in Poland or elsewhere. And it's taken them over 80 years to get the names of people that that were followed in Germany. And the Jews now have these... They call them the records of the Holocaust, and they're basically names of people who lived and died and died in certain cities or camps or whatever. But why did it take them 80 years to get this together when all this stuff was together? Did they work on the stuff? What did they do? I'm not sure, and I don't say one way or the other if the Holocaust happened or not, but it just seems really strange to me that the Jews don't want anybody talking about it. What are they hiding something? That's the first thing that comes to mind when somebody doesn't want anybody talking about something, that they're afraid somebody's going to say something and that some story might fall apart or something. I mean, it seems very strange to me, and it would seem to me that if this really happened, they'd want everybody to be studying it. They'd want the whole world to be studying on the Holocaust constantly, day after day after day, and writing one article after another on it, so that they could suffer and be victims even further, because they like that so much. But instead, they don't want anybody discussing it. They don't want anybody talking about it. What are they afraid of? Are they insecure about it? Do they doubt that story? Are they the real Holocaust deniers for not wanting anybody to write about it? Do they have reasons that they know about they don't want anyone else to discover as to why they don't want people to write about it? I always mention this guy from Mauthausen. I think it was Mauthausen. It was in Austria. It was one of these labor camps, and the man claimed that he was a victim of the Nazis, and that he was in that labor camp for years. And he had a not-for-profit organization where he collected money, and he had a magazine, and he wrote how the physicians there. Did these weird experiments on the Jewish prisoners, and he was always so afraid they were going to do these experiments on him. And then on the 50th or 60th or 70th anniversary of the camp, he goes there, and the most astounding thing happened. The prisoners who were there, who watched this guy's organization over the years, called him up and said, you know, we never saw you here. Where were you here? We never saw you. And he then admitted that he had never been there, that he made the whole thing up. And they said, why did you do it? And they said, well, because so many Jews died here, and they can't talk for themselves, so I decided I would talk for them. I would give them a voice by pretending that I had been here, and that would give them a voice. And they said, buddy, get the hell out of here. And they got him out of the camp so they could have their three-day meeting in peace without this charlatan who had embarrassed every one of them. But you have to ask yourself, why do people who, when they're talking about all these people dying and all, why don't they want people to write about it? Why don't they want them to investigate? And if they investigate and they don't quite agree with what the Jews said at the Nuremberg trial, Well, why do they want them arrested and sent to jail for 5 to 7 years in Mannheim prison? I don't think it makes their cause look very good. I think it makes their argument look weak. I think it makes it look like they have something to hide. And I just wonder what that might be. Now, I'm not saying I'm doubting the Holocaust, but I'm doubting the veracity of these people when they feel like they have to make laws in countries that are not Jewish, like Germany's not a Jewish country, Austria's not a Jewish country, but they get these folks to make these laws. Because they really know how to pressure a politician. They do it by offering money to their opponent if they don't pass what the Jews want. And they can get anybody unelected that way. And they know it. And these representatives know it too. So they do whatever these gross folks want. And by gross folks, I mean these Reds. These Bolsheviks, these Judeo-Bolsheviks who ran the Soviet Union. And we're not talking about 6 million dead in the Soviet Union. No, no, no. We're talking 65 million people dead in the Soviet Union. And there's not one monument, until recently, to commemorate the 65 million dead there. And a little monument was put up in Washington for the 100 million that were killed, not only in Russia, but in Red China and in these other communist countries. And communism was started by the Jews. Karl Marx was a Jew. Mordecai Levy was his real name. His father was a rabbi. Communism is as Jewish as as Goldman Sachs and the Bank of America. These Jews, they want to control everything. They want to control all the money. They want to run the Federal Reserve. They want to be able to counterfeit money and rent it out to people for interest. And they want to do no work themselves. They just want to churn things and make other people work for them on these little sleek bag deals like fake phony paper money. Paper money that doesn't even, in fact, it's not even on paper anymore. It's all electronic. No one ever sees a paper dollar anymore. It's all on electronic ledgers. And they just make it up out of nothing. They counterfeit it, basically. And these are the people that also, they counterfeit money. But if you say that they counterfeited the Holocaust, you have to go to jail in Mannheim prison for 7 years. It's these people, these counterfeiters of money, who don't want you to say that they counterfeited historical lies. And they don't want you to tell either that they killed 65 million Christians in Russia. Oh, because that might not be good for race relations. You know what I mean, sir? You certainly wouldn't want to say that, even though it happened. And we're going to deny that it happened, but I know on Jew Watch you have all of the information there, including reports from the American government, from the New York Times, from the Washington Post, from Encyclopedia Britannica about how it happened, and from diplomats from all different countries that observed it. We know that you have that information, but we don't think that you should tell other people. In fact, we're going to tell them that you're misinformed. Well, I guess what they mean by being misinformed is that I got the information from places that weren't, newspapers that weren't owned by Jewish people. But you see, that wouldn't be the case. Because if you go to JewWatch.com on the internet, you'll find that almost every citation up there is in a Jewish-owned publication. Like the Jerusalem Post or the New York Times, which is owned by the Salzburger family, the Washington Post, owned by the Catherine Mayer Graham family, which is Jewish. Almost every newspaper in the world's owned by a Jew. In St. Louis, the Post-Dispatch was owned by the Pulitzers, who were Hungarian communists who came over here and started these newspapers. You know, if you want to make money and not spend any to make it, you start a newspaper. All you need is ink, which is about $5, $10, $15 a gallon, and paper, which is, pennies. And you smear that ink on there, and you make sure that 90% of the newspaper is advertisements that you get paid for, and only 10% on each page is news. And you advertise for all the schlock companies like the cellular phone companies that will rob you blind and overcharge you if you get a minute or two over on your monthly payments. You know, they'll give you like a $30 kick fine or fine, F-I-N-E. And generally, the guy that runs the telephone company, his name is F-E-I-N, Fine, which is a Jewish name, or Cohen, or some other name like that. And that's just the way that it is. That's just the way that it is. I was looking on Jewwatch at the names of the people who run the big money and business shacks in this world. I'm calling them shacks. They're like corporations and banks. Like the World Bank is, it was run in 2005 by Paul Wolfowitz, who was a neocon in the Republican Bush administration in Washington at the Freak Show. And before him, it was James D. Wolfenson, another Jew. The Federal Reserve System under Bush was run by Alan Greenspan, who started the housing bubble and thought it was just great. And then he was replaced by Ben Shalom Bernanke, who's Jewish. And, of course, when Ben Shalom Bernanke was first put in there, no one said he was Jewish, but Jewwatch immediately outed him as a Jew. The Economic Policy Institute, let's see. Do you have a Christian there? It's a Larry Mishel. Mishel, well, El means God in Jewish. Mishel comes up on a web search as a Jewish surname. Ross Eisenbray. That sounds pretty Jewish to me. The International Futures and Options Exchange, Hugh Friedberg. We don't even need to go there. Chicago Board of Trade Chairman, Nicholas J. Neubauer. That's Jewish. New York Board of Trade, Acting President, CEO, Chairman, and Chairman of the Board, Charles H. Falk. Vice Chairman of the Board, Frederick W. Schoenhut. American National Standards Institute, ANSI. President and CEO, Mark W. Hurwitz. American Corn Growers Association. Now, this is a good one because, you know, corn has all that GMO stuff in it. Genetically modified organism. It's run by Gary Goldberg. Now, in February 2001, Goldberg was sentenced to 5 years probation for obtaining child pornography by mail. I bet he's the only person that got probation for that. Usually they go to jail for that. When the FBI and police knocked on his door, it was the end of Gary Goldberg, chief executive of the American Corn Growers Association. The Tulsa World reported, now and forever, it's Gary Goldberg, convicted sex offender. Goldberg, who once rubbed elbows with senators and even visited President Clinton in the White House, now says, "I'm a felon. They don't let felons in the Oval Office." Goldberg's crime led to a very public resignation from his high-profile ACGA role. That's the American Corn Growers Association. But the organization did not divorce itself of Goldberg entirely. Goldberg serves as the chief executive officer of the American Corn Growers Association linked American Corn Growers Foundation, where he remains in charge of fundraising and glad handing the big money foundation to keep American Corn Growers Association afloat. Goldberg, a Tulsa corn grower, served as CEO of the American Corn Growers Association for 3 years and the national president for five. We ought to talk about the American Corn Growers Association. Don't you imagine that they've been behind this genetically modified corn? You know, Monsanto seed modification enterprises, which are just 3 miles from my house in St. Louis. Monsanto was being run by a Jew by the name of Shapiro during the period of time when they started doing this, and they would. They would lobby the senators and congressmen to try to make absolutely certain that they could get patents on life forms. In fact, recently there was a judge said that they were trying to patent steak. They said, well, the steak had modifying cord in it because they fed it to the, to cows and the bulls, and they made this steak that had their genetics in it, and they wanted that to be patentable so they could get some kind of a fee off of that too. They also have these crazy court cases where some farmer has genetically modified Monsanto corn in his field, and the pollen from that corn blows over into the fields of other farmers. And farmers have been used to using their seeds over and over again. They just take, you know, part of their seed and then replant it. But if any part of the crop that they plant has any modified genes in it from Monsanto, then they'll sue the farmer and take his farm away. Now you can imagine the audacity of a Jew that would sue a farmer because his seed wasn't controlled, his pollen didn't stay in the field where it was supposed to be, but went over to another man's field and trespassed onto his field, and now the man can't use his corn to plant, and when he does, they look at his corn and they say, oh, you've got genetically modified corn by Monsanto, we're going to sue you for your farm. And that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. Now, these are these nice Jewish people who are victims of everybody in the world. And they're victimizing farmers who simply, their only crime was to live next door to a farmer that bought this crazy genetically modified corn from Jewish-owned Monsanto Chemical Company, a company that is hated by almost every nation in the world except the United States. Now, the interesting thing is, this company has so much control over the United States that almost every item in your grocery store is made out of modified corn and other modified seeds. The other countries around the world universally don't want these seeds being put in their countries. Monsanto, this Jewish-run monstrosity, has even made these death seeds that once you have one plant from them, they won't reproduce anymore. They become sterile. And a lot of people say, well, there's a chance that we might have a complete breakdown of crops because this little juggernaut that they put into these seeds may get out into other seeds. And pretty soon there may be no plants whatsoever in the world. Now I'm not saying that every person that works for Monsanto is Jewish, but everyone I knew when I went to the University of Missouri that was a geneticist in the agriculture department, they all had Jewish names, and they were definitely Jewish people. Now this company, this Monsanto, used to be a chemical company, and then all of a sudden, after it had polluted a whole bunch of streams, which you've seen in some very famous movies and documentaries, suddenly changed the company over to a seed company. And what is so terrible about it is I understand that they're buying up as many seed companies as they can. They're trying to make these death seeds the only seeds that you can buy, but no one's buying it around the world. They're afraid that they're going to lose their corn crop. Mexico doesn't want it, but once again, the pollen from Monsanto seeds have gotten into the Mexican seeds, and everybody's someday going to have to be eating corn that has a Monsanto signature on it. And when that happens, will they go through the world and have one court case after another saying that we want to get paid for this seed because we own every piece of corn in the world? Because when the pollen floats over somebody else's field and contaminates it, the farmer there is responsible to pay some sort of a royalty to Monsanto. What kind of devils are these people? Who would come up with a scheme like that to change all of world agriculture and to sue farmers? You know, I went up to their website, and they had a part of the website said America's Farmers, and they had all these happy farm families. They started with a black farm family, then they had three or four white families with blonde-haired kids. And they were talking about how wonderful the families thought Monsanto was, that its products were able to reduce the CO2 use of the farmers to plow the fields, etc., because their fields were so much more productive. And then I remember reading this, looking at this film called King Corn. You ought to look that film up. I think you can see it for free on Google Video or in sections at YouTube. Or you might be able to get a torrent of it, or you might be able to get out of your library. It's called King Corn. It's spelled with a K, King Corn. I try it with a two K's in it, King and Corn, or King for King, K for King, and C for Corn, King Corn. There's about two guys who were originally from Iowa, and they went back there to see how the corn industry was, and they found out that the corn from Iowa and Nebraska all the way to Ohio was poisonous. And by poisonous, they meant that if you ate it yourself, it'd kill you. It would kill you. They have one type of corn that grows very, very well. They used to have hundreds of types. Now they have it down to one genetically altered corn crop. And they feed it to cattle for 10 months. After 9 months, they slaughter the cattle. If they have to go longer than 10 months with it, the cattle will not only get fat from it, but they'll die. They'll start to bleed inside their stomach because the corn cuts into their stomach. And it's poisonous to them that way. It's really a bad seed for cattle to be eating. And they can only, like I said, they can only eat the stuff for 10 months, according to this movie. And all the farmers that live there have gone broke planting this corn. Now, it used to be that there were all these healthy farmers out there in Iowa and around planting corn, planting wheat, planting all this other stuff. But the agriculture department got them to just plant the corn because they gave them a subsidy just to plant the corn. And it turns out that there's no profit in it. About the only money they make is a little subsidy that they get from the federal government, which I think is somewhere around $25 to $75 an acre, something like that. And that's what they end up within their pocket. And they grow all this corn and harvest it, and they end up with only $25 to $75 an acre in their pocket. And they might have 1,000 acres. So if they had 1,000 acres, they could make up to $25,000 to $75,000. But that's about it. So they all quit farming, and they sold their farms to big Judeo-Bolshevik banks and insurance companies, who now run it with huge combines that cost $500,000 apiece. Proud America, isn't it great? And the rest of the world doesn't want to eat their corn because it's genetically modified corn from Monsanto, I guess. It's disgusting. It's disgusting what this country will do for profit and for money. And what they'll allow goons to do who run our corporations. I mean, first of all, they'll allow them to produce chemicals in factories that, release chemical sludge that'll kill people and fish into streams. And then they'll allow them to modify corn into patent life forms. And when the pollen from those life forms goes into somebody else's field, they tell them, you can't plant your own corn because it's polluted because this stuff got into your field. Now, you would think it would be the other way around, that Monsanto should have to pay the farmer whose seeds were modified against his will because the next-door farm let their pollen get away and into his field. Wouldn't you think that? Well, that's not what the newspapers say. They say it's just the opposite. You can own a farm and be victimized by this stuff blowing into your field. And then you can be sued by Monsanto. It doesn't seem right. It seems very, very wrong to me. And I would hope that the Monsanto people would change their ways. I would hope they'd stop modifying this corn, according to Infowars.com and other sources. This genetically modified corn has some investigators say it's caused impotency among men, and it's not good for people. It's not good for animals. It has changes in it. It makes them less, makes them more vulnerable to diseases too. There's been a lot written about genetically modified corn, and now I believe there's a law that you can't advertise that your corn isn't genetically modified. They don't want you to know that. They don't want you to make a wise decision when you purchase. And just 2 days ago, I read an article where Monsanto had spent $218 million in the second quarter to lobby Congress. you know, it is so sick. It's like a horror movie, which is based on dark humor. You know, these companies that are doing evil things like death seeds, they're lobbying Congress. They're getting laws passed, you know, so that they can prevail in court no matter what happens. And, you know, that's basically, you're basically jury tampering when you do that. If you can order just the right law for your company to screw people over with, well, then nobody else has a chance in court, and I guess that's what they want. They don't want anybody to have a chance in court. They wanna have it all. Well, you know, I don't think anything is going to be done about this until there's a huge catastrophe, like when all of the seeds suddenly get so screwed up from modification that it won't grow anymore. And then death starts settling into the human race all over the world because these altered crops are no longer diverse and healthy. They're battered with all sorts of shortcuts genetically to maybe there's something's been put in to make them fend off insects. And it might even have insecticide that's reproduced by the seed and by the germ inside the seed, so that every cell in the plant has insecticide. So when you eat it, you're eating insecticide, just like an insect would, which is why the insects won't touch it. But you don't have the sense to know that there's insecticide, and it tastes the same to you as unmodified material. But you're injecting poisons that would kill insects and that might shorten your own life or give you cancer. Might cause birds to lay eggs that can't hatch because the shells are too thin, like happened with DDT in the past. Now, these are things that are going on here. These are things that if you keep reading the newspapers, it's just like a monster show. All these monsters playing these games with corn, with wheat. And you know, in that King Corn film, it pointed out they had their hair tested and their skin and their fingernails, and if they were 99.9% corn. That was what they were made out of. So that's when they went to look at the corn and they found out it was poisonous even. And they're made out of poisonous corn. You couldn't even eat without it killing you. And that's what's happening to us worldwide as human beings. We're being subjected to corn that is poisonous. The cattle that eat the corn, and if they eat it for more than 10 months, it kills them. And this is what's happening to us. It's a very dangerous thing that we need to consider before it's too late, because we don't know where this is going to end, but it doesn't look good to me. I'd like to thank you for listening to The World Today, and tune in again tomorrow for another program, and you have a nice day.